By actually meditating, who's it meditating upon? And he asks many questions. Are the energies for creation your own energies? Are you Svarat, the self-sufficient Lord from whom the energies are coming and the plan is coming? Or is there someone above you that you're driving those energies from? What is the ultimate cause of all causes? Once things are created, how are they maintained? How's all of everything going on? He has many important questions. So, the cause of all causes, details. The principle that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. And through various incarnations, the Purusha avatars, he brings creation into being. There's a fair amount of description about the Virat Rupa in chapter 5, and more expanded in chapter 6. Chapter 6 is Purusha Sukta confirmed. Purusha Sukta confirmed is, as it sounds, as the Purusha Sukta prayers from Rig Veda have their commentary in Srimad Bhagavatam. What they mean is expanded upon in the 6th chapter, detailing the relationship between the universal form. Because you've heard this discussion a little bit in Vedanagari, Purusha Sukta confirmed.
Yes, working. That phone is working.
Okay. Purusha Sukta confirmed. Because those are the verses that we read from the Vedanagari. So, following the Purusha Sukta confirmed, the Supreme Lord, the appearances of the Supreme Lord is the object of the next question. How does he appear in this world which he creates? And so, as in first canto, there's a list of very short narration of some of the incarnations. Again in canto 2, chapter 7, scheduled incarnations are identified. And then Brahma is explaining to Narada that this is all many things he's explaining, but it's taking place by the agency of the Lord's own potency, his internal potency. Through the agency of his internal potency, he appears in that material world which through his external potency he creates. And Brahma is just one of the empowered personalities that makes the material creation of the Lord come into being. And to understand the focus just preceding this verse is the way by which those who are within this world can understand it is by devotion, not by figuring them out, by mental speculation. He can be, he's unknowable, he's unlimited, but to whatever degree the living entity can know him, it's through the disclosure of the Supreme Lord, through the medium of devotion. And when one is fixed in such devotion, the previous verse to this morning verse said, one doesn't need a process of meditation to practice. The mind will already be fixed when devotion is elevated. And the understanding of that Supreme Lord doesn't require a process of speculation. In fact, one gives it up. He uses as an example, just like King Indra, who is the source of rain within the universe, he doesn't need to go dig wells to get his water supply. Likewise, a devotee doesn't need a process of mental speculation. In fact, we give it up. Doesn't need a process of meditation. The mind is already fixed. And then this morning first. So you don't have the text, so I'm just going to read the sloka. Sanshaya Samapi Bhavur Bhagavan Yatasya Bhava Swabhava Vihitasya Satak Prasiddhihi Dehe Swadhatu Vigame Nuvishrim Yadmane Vyome Natatra Purusho Navashir Navashir Vitejaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Master of everything. Auspicious, because the result of whatever actions are performed by the living being, either in the material or spiritual existence, are awarded by the Lord. So, Sukadeva Goswami is saying, the Supreme Lord is the Shreyasam. He's the awarder of all things that are auspicious. Shreyas and Preyas, these two terms. Shreyas is the long-term, all-auspicious benefit, and he's the bestower of that, because one can say that because whatever there is, that material or spiritual activities receive the rewards of, he's the bestower of both. So, Sat Shreyasam. Api Vibhu, although he's above the material creation, he's not part of the material creation, he's not under the laws of the material creation. Whatever does come that is beneficial in the material creation, he is that source. This is connected to the other question. Who is the cause of all of this? He's the cause of, within this, he's the cause of all auspiciousness. And in the spiritual realm as well. As such, he is the ultimate benefactor. Every individual living entity is unborn, and therefore, even after the annihilation of the material elementary body, the living entity exists exactly like the air within the body. So there's two messages in the verse and purports about 7-8 paragraphs. So there's lots of different bites of information here or understanding. The Lord and living entity. First, the Lord is distinct from the living entity in that he's the source of everything, including from himself. And Brahma's ability to create, and ingredients to create, and potency to create, and impetus to create. The Lord is the source of all things within this world. And he's the source of all auspicious things in this world and of the spiritual world. And the living entity, the position of the living entity is, living entity is eternal. Although the particular configuration of the embodiment of living entity is not. It's like our discussion yesterday that in the Chitraketu story, where Narada and Angira were giving transcendental knowledge, the position of the soul in this transient state of matter, one needs to be very, very clear. There's a distinction. The soul is unchanging, and the configurations of matter are always changing. And the nice metaphor is given, it's going to be explained more in the purport, but just like the air within the body, what happens to the air within the body when the body is finished? The air continues to exist. I mean, similarly, the animating spark within the body, that's the soul continues to exist. And the soul may not be lined up with that same bodily air, and they have to be lined up with the same material elements. But the soul continues to exist. The air continues to, the elements continue to exist, although the configuration is different. The soul continues to exist, although it may not be, it will not be in touch with the same elements. We have a Bhagavad Gita? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The living entity is unborn and eternal, and as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 2.30, the living entity is not exhausted, even though the material elementary body is vanquished. Does anybody think of a verse, that one that's here is not the one we normally refer to, but where's the verse from Bhagavad Gita that makes this statement? Bhagavad Gita quiz, Sunday morning, 7 o'clock. The living entity is unborn and eternal, and as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity is not exhausted, even though the material element of your body is vanquished. Anybody can think of a verse in Bhagavad Gita that expresses that? Nityanityanam is not Bhagavad Gita verse, but it does say that. Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Yodras, Eko Bhunam, Yodhidhati Kamam. So amongst the plural, Nityanam, there's one supreme eternal. The soul is eternal. Okay. Any other?
I was thinking Nainam Chindanti Shastra, Nainam Dharati Pavakam, Nachayate Iti Aapo, Nasosheti Maruti. So that the material elements don't affect it. There's one other verse after that, but kind of remember.
Okay. Here's Ajopisan Avyayatma Bhutana Ishwaro Pisan. Here's Prabhupada is referring to 2.30 Bhagavad Gita. Dehi Nityam Abhadyoyam Dehi Sarvasya Bharata Tasmat Sarvani Bhutani Yatvam Sochitam Arhasi. That's O descendant of Bharat. He who dwells in the body can never be slain. But when the body is slain, the soul is not slain. Therefore, you need not grieve for any living being. Mahavite Hanimani Sharire. So the living being is unborn, eternal. And the living entity is not exhausted, even though the material elementary body was vanquished. As long as the living entity is in material existence, actions performed by him are rewarded in the next life, or even in the present life. Similarly, in his spiritual life also, actions are rewarded by the Lord by the five kinds of liberation. Right? Five kinds of liberation. So the position of liberation is where there's no action and reaction of material laws of karma. But there are different positions of liberation, or categories of liberation, in the spiritual realm, and that's awarded by the Supreme Lord also. Even the impersonalist cannot achieve the desired merging into the existence of the Supreme without being favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. even those who are denying the existence of the Supreme Person are dependent upon the Supreme Person for their award of merging with Brahman. As it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord awards similar results as one desires in one's present life. What's that verse 4.11? Bhagavad Gita. The Lord awards similar results as one desires in one's present life. So, as one regards Krishna or approaches Krishna or surrenders unto Krishna, prapadyante, whatever relationship we have with Krishna, that determines the outcome of our next situation. And it's not only after this life, but even during our present lifetime. It's just one of those rules, because the soul has an eternal relationship with Krishna, and how they regard Krishna determines the outcomes of their situations in life. Confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. The living entities are given freedom to make their choice, and the Lord awards them accordingly. That's one paragraph. It is the duty of everyone, therefore, to worship devotedly only the personality of Godhead to achieve his desired goal. So that is a very logical conclusion. It's not just information. What do you do with that information? If materially and spiritually auspicious things are awarded by one person, unto that person I should surrender and serve. In a very focused way. Sarvadharma parityaja mamekam shananam. Even if I'm a materialist, even if I want lots of stuff, I should surrender to that person who can award that stuff. And serve it. I get the stuff I want. And the lack of eligibility to receive things is when persons are impious, so their access is less. The living entities are given. The impersonalist, instead of speculating or meditating, this is referring to the previous verse. The previous verse says that one who is fixed in the understanding of the personality of God, and is by dint of devotional service, such person doesn't need meditation process or speculative knowledge process. So the default is the impersonalist doesn't have that fixed devotion. So instead of speculating and meditating, the impersonalist can directly execute the routine of devotional service of the Lord and easily obtain the desired goal. If he wants liberation, then let him take up devotional service. Akama Sarvakamova Mokshakama Udharadi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajita Purusham Param. That's a verse from here. Supposing I just want liberation. Okay. Tivra Bhakti. Supposing I want all material things. Sarvakama. Very well. Tivra Bhakti. Supposing I don't have any material or desire or I don't want liberation. Very good. Tivra Bhakti. It's like one tablet. for that is because the bestower of all things is that same person. We're connected to that same person. Paragraph. The devotees, however, are naturally inclined to become associates of the Lord and not merge in the spiritual existence as conceived by the impersonal devotees. Therefore, following their constitutional instincts, achieve the desired goal of becoming servitors, friends, fathers and mothers, conjugal lovers of the Supreme Lord. So those are the awards to the devotee. That is, rasa, a particular loving mellow with the Supreme Lord. That's also awarded by the Supreme Lord. Whatever category or classification people fall in, they're dependent upon the Supreme Lord. The devotees have their aspiration also. They want that relationship. The devotional service of the Lord involves 9 transcendental processes, such as hearing and chanting. 9 processes, that's the Prahlad Maharaj verse, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasetam, Darshanam, Vandanam, Vasyam, Sakyam, Atma, Vivekanam. The 9 activities of devotional service, such as hearing and chanting. And by performing such easy and natural devotional services, the devotees achieve the highest perfectional results, far, far superior to the merging into the existence of Brahman. The devotees are therefore never advised to indulge in speculating upon the nature of the Supreme or artificially meditating on the void. Prabhupada in this paragraph is amplifying the previous verse. Scheduled incarnations, understanding the mystery of these scheduled incarnations is to the medium of devotional service. One who is connected in that way need not take these other speculative or meditation processes. You can remember from chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, the devotional service chapter, Krishna gives this descending hierarchy of things. Ideal perfection is mind absorbed in me, intelligence engaged always in me. In such a state, surely one will attain my abode. And if one can't do that, follow the regulations of bhakti, and you'll develop the desire to achieve me. If you can't do that, try to work for me. If you can't do that, give up the results of your work for some beneficial cause. If you can't do that, cultivate knowledge. And that's it, that the speculation process is at the bottom. Better than that is meditation, better than that is sacrificing the fruits of one's work. So the verse is saying, and from the previous verse also, when one is in this position of following the regulations of bhakti and the having the desire to be always absorbed with mind in Krishna, in devotion, and intelligence fixed in various ways to serve him, then this meditation process, speculation process, is not required. And in fact, one gives it up. The example from the previous is Indra going to go dig a well? It doesn't need to go dig a well. He already has his water. Yeah. Why is he going to go dig a well? So, the devotee does, why is he going to indulge in speculative processes? There's no need. Next paragraph. One should not, however, mistakenly think that after the annihilation of the present body, there's no body by which one can associate with the Lord face to face. Now he's going to get into this, the fact that each spirit soul naturally has a spiritual form, with spiritual senses, spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence. So it's not that in the liberated state you basically go out of existence, you just become a twinkling speck in the universe. The living entity is unborn. It is not that he is manifest only within the creation of the material body. On the other hand, it is true that the material body develops only by the desires of the living entity. The evolution of the material body is due to the desires of the living being. According to the desires of the living being, the material body develops. So, from the spirit soul, the material body comes into existence generated from the living force. That is, matter is there, the soul is there, the soul has desires. According to the desires and the deserve of the living entity, the configuration of matter is assembled under the supervision of the super soul. But supposing there's no more material desire, does that mean the soul just becomes this twinkling spark that has no capacity to experience the spiritual realm because there's no senses through which to perceive? The answer is, that's not so. Since the living being is eternal, he exists just like the air within the body. The example given in the verse, now he's explaining it. Air is within and without the body. Therefore, when the external covering of the material body is vanquished, the living spark, like the air within the body, continues to exist. And by the directions of the Lord, because he is the ultimate benefactor, the living entity is awarded the necessary spiritual body befitting his association with the Lord in the matter of these are the liberation categories of Vaishnava liberation, Sarukya, Salokya, Sharsi, and Samipya. Does anybody know what each one of them are? Or the kind of evidence? Sarupya means? Same bodily form as the Lord. Salokya, same planet, your proper rights. Equal facility to live on the same planet with the Lord. Sharsti, opulences like the Lord. Samipya,
association.
Equal association with the Lord. Two more paragraphs. The Lord is so kind that even if a devotee of the Lord cannot fulfill the complete course of devotional service, unalloyed and uncontaminated by material association, he is given another chance in the next life by being awarded a birth in the family of a devotee or a rich man, so that without being engaged in the struggle for material existence, the devotee can finish the remaining purification of his existence, and thus immediately after relinquishing the present body, go back home, back to Godhead. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, and it's true. Krishna describes the unsuccessful yogi. He can go to the heavenly planet for a long time, then after enjoying, come again to this earthly position and continue, or just take a shortcut, just take birth in the Suchinam Srimatam Gaya Yoga Brashta Vajayate. Yoga Brashta, the yogi that doesn't complete his path, can take birth in a family of devotees or Suchi or Srimatam, a family that has wealth, sufficient wealth, that hasn't struggled for material existence, for economic sustenance, it can comfortable life, and can use that facility for continuing and perfecting spiritual life. And best of all is being born in a devotee family where naturally the atmosphere is conducive. So the opportunity is presented to complete one's path. Last paragraph. In this connection, detailed information is available in the Bhagavad Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami, Prabhupada. Once achieving the spiritual existence, the devotee is eternally situated there, as already discussed in the previous verse. the same as previous verse, the same. There's no need of other processes once you're there. One is permanently situated. But in the this topic that's being discussed is a very important topic in the Bhagavatam. It's one of the central topics of Bhakti Sandarbha from Jiva Goswami, where the living entity, from this position to the spiritual position, there are many verses in the Bhagavatam that discuss that transition, and this is one of them. So Jiva Goswami discusses this elaborately. The manifesting of a spiritual form as the result of devotional service. It's like within a seed, the form of a tree or a form of a plant or form of something is in a dormant state. So after the germination process takes place, then the form of the tree manifests itself, although it's just in its little seed condition. The same, the soul presently within this material form is not exhibiting a spiritual form. It's in this very limited state, but through the process of devotional service, that spiritual form manifests. It exists. But as the spiritual consciousness is now covered or dormant by the devotional service process, it's awakened, and that spiritual form is then manifested by spiritual senses. One can interact with the form of the Lord and see the form of the Lord and so on, experience the spiritual world in that spiritual body. That's a nice point Prabhupada is making. One should not think mistakenly that after the annihilation of this present body, there's no body by which one can associate with the Lord face to face. The spiritual body, one's svarup, is manifested. It exists eternally, but to reach our conscious awareness, it's dormant. As consciousness is covered, that spiritual form is covered. As consciousness awakens, that spiritual form manifests, all through the medium of devotional service. And so Prabhupada's comment is, this is a great spiritual science and it's discussed in detail in Bhakti Siddhartha. Gradual study. Any discussion? Topics?
In general.
Or just in general? Not necessarily due to lack of faith. It can simply be that lack of experience or maturity. Let's say, you know, as a tree is growing, the young tree does not produce fruits right away. It's just because the young tree is not yet a mature tree. But after some time, the tree will begin bearing some fruits. There's not something wrong with this tree, it's not. And same in our practice of devotional service, there are stages, sadhana stage, and there are stages within the sadhana stage, and then the bhava stage, and then the prema stage. So things that a very advanced devotee can readily understand, someone that's in the sadhana stage may not so readily understand. There's not usually practicality. You can say that the faith is not yet matured. And therefore, another way of answering your question is, when Prabhupada was asked, what should we do when we don't understand something, when we read it after devotion? But read it again. And if you still don't understand, read it again. If you still don't understand, read it again. And gradually you come to understand. By maturing. Not by you're becoming really accomplished at speculating. Or as your indication, it's just that I'm not faithful. It may not be of a stage for us to understand certain things. How does a small child understand where babies come from? If mother explained, the child can understand. I said it's a problem because they don't have faith in the mother. They're not at the stage of us where they can understand something like that. More of time. So for us as practicing devotees, our business is not just gathering information, our business is hearing the faith. And if there are things I don't understand, I have trust and I have faith, and in the course of time I'll understand these things, at least that which is important for me to understand. Like, let's say, that Krishna has unlimited mystic potencies. I have faith in that principle. I don't need to know and understand how Krishna lived for Govardhan Hill. He's a master of mystic potencies. So, you know, some persons ask the question, well, if it was so much inundation of rain coming from Lord Indra that the whole of Vrindavan was being flooded, so when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, why didn't that water flood underneath Govardhan Hill and flood the devotees under Govardhan Hill? They got the umbrella, but it's flooded. And then the answer is, he directed Sudarshan Chakra to move around Govardhan Hill so fast the water just evaporated and couldn't go under the hill. Master of mystic power. Okay. Now how do I understand that? But in principle.
The desire of the individual.
I'm not sure what you asked, but let's say you want to learn how to play drums. So is the desire to learn how to play drum and the impetus, are they the same? That's what you're asking?
My confusion is impetus is something that makes me go and do it. Yeah. The desire is also something that makes me go and, so is there a difference?
Yeah. One is, well, in this particular case, in Brahma's case, he was selected by Vishnu as the qualified person to do this important service. And so he bestowed upon him that impetus to do so. And if there isn't a qualified person, scriptures teach us, the Supreme Lord takes that post himself because it's such an important function. One has to be super qualified. Imagine a little mistake. Wow. So take a super qualified person. And as we find in Brahma Samhita, even after the prayers of Brahma's mature realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he still had this desire to create a universe. And he was bewildered. Why do I still have this desire? Because the Holy Lord gave it. But that's a different kind of impetus or a different kind of desire than our desire to something. Desire to learn to play mandolin. It's, you know, I feel gratified. There's this thing, and there's, I like it, and there's a challenge, and so there's, it's a mix of devotion and, you know, connecting something I like with something that's connected with devotion. And that's different. That's a material desire, but dovetailed with something that's in service to Krishna. So there is a difference between our desires, and Brahma's impetus for creation. But, you know, the net result may look very, very similar, if not identical. We don't have a desire to create a universe, we may have a desire to create a family. The acknowledging of that desire by the support system the Supreme Lord provides is, there's some similar dynamic. The Lord supplies the ingredients, he supplies the intelligence, he supplies the ability, he supplies the plan. There's a very different position of transcendental desire and a material desire, or a material desire that's mixed with something that's in relation to Krishna, so it makes it devotional service. Something that's impelled by the modes of nature, and then something that's given by the Supreme Lord are quite different.
So our spiritual desire is given by the Supreme Lord?
Well, the verse that we read says he's the beneficiary. In our case, so we can take it that our desires are mixed. That's a pretty safe assessment. Something spiritual and something material mixed. And he's the awarder of both. He doesn't prompt us, okay, Arun, desire to play drum. Okay, he's got the signal from the Supreme Lord that says he wants me to play a drum. It's not That would be spirit. Mix. Mix. So that material desire that's coming from, because souls have desire. They're parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. It's not like we can't desire unless Krishna prompts us to desire something. We have this tiny free will. So it's from the soul. Because the soul is part of the Supreme. It's not the soul is existing and operating completely in a vacuum apart from the Supreme. But the soul desires within some limited scope of time and free will. Okay.
You said when they, like you gave the example of playing the drum, when the prompt comes from the Supreme Lord, then
he sanctions. In our case, Arun says, gee, I really like the way Rati plays drum and Saval plays drum. I'd like to learn to play drum. So the signal goes to Krishna. Krishna says, okay, here's a drum, here's some teachers, practice. He sanctions. Man proposes, God disposes. Desire is coming from the soul. Now, is it a spiritual or material desire? Depends upon different factors. And the degree to which it's spiritual, the degree to which it's material. It's coming from the soul, Krishna is awarding. It's not that we're a stone, and then Krishna sees, okay, this stone should have this desire. Okay, Rune, you should desire to play drum. Yes, sir, I desire to play drum. It's not other imposed, it's coming from the soul. Mixed with the modes of nature, mixed with a desire to serve. Something else?
You mentioned that when devotion is elevated, when devotion is elevated, then one doesn't need meditation. That is not suggesting, but at that stage one wants meditation.
One is already situated in meditation, that's the idea. Something that helps our feeble minds. When you have $1,000,000, you have $100, you have $10. It's already included in $1,000,000. So when one is fixed in devotion upon the personality of Godhead, you don't have to go up. Let me go find a place, a process of meditation that I can meditate. Mind is already absorbed. And specifically in the previous purport, Prabhupada explains, neither meditation upon something impersonal, nor even a discipline of meditation upon the real form of the Lord. It's already there. So, if someone can go to a yoga class and learn some process of meditation, then you think, yeah, maybe you should become a better devotee and should go to a meditation class. You don't need that. Good. It's within the process. The faithful devotee understands it's within the process of devotion itself. The problem is not in the technique. The problem is my heart is hard. Supposing you develop a technique, same problem is still there. It's neither is it satisfying, even if I can discipline the mind or something or other, curb the senses so I can discipline the mind better. The heart's still hard. And so it's not satisfying. And conversely, when from the heart we're attracted, the personality guided meditation is already there. It's a symptom, it's a subset. That's what the idea is. And actually, I'd like to understand the personality guided. The understanding is facilitated by that loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's how one can understand it. Do I need to go, you know, to practice some speculative knowledge process? Go take a university course on understanding Krishna. There isn't such a course anyways, but if there was such a course, it's a joke. That's like the gopis said to Krishna, you called us in the dead of night by playing upon your flute and you come. Now you're telling us to go home and just practice dhyan yoga. Stop this. We have no interest in dhyan yoga. We just want you. We've abandoned everything for you. Stop doing this. That's it.
So the key thing is that it only applies to elevated devotees. Like a neophyte may think, well, I mean, I have already a lot of devotion for the Lord, I don't need any meditation. So because there are people of those
in the sadhana stage also. The sadhana stage, one needs, if one is going to get to that mature stage, one needs faith. One needs to do those things to nurture that faith. And one should be aware of things that take one away from that position of faith. If one does adopt something, one should understand that something that I'm adopting has value only in so much as it brings me closer to that faithful position. And if I adopt something other, the yellow light should be flashing. Caution. Let me make sure that it's nurturing my faith and taking shelter of the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. Spiritual needs are taken care of, can we be assured that our material protection will be also?
That's your question? That is a true statement, but then how is it spiritual? How is that desire spiritual? Because when material things are there, then the desire becomes material.
Well, it depends on, I'm not sure I understand your question, but I think I do. If one is spiritually satisfied, then one can be very happy in a situation when one has or doesn't have material facilities. If one is not spiritually situated, one will not be happy if one doesn't have or does have material facilities. This is an important lesson of spiritual life that Prabhupada taught. The Yukta Vairagya principle is that one can be Vairagya, one can be detached by using things in Krishna service. But supposing those things aren't there, I can be disturbed. I need those things to be happy. Or I need XYZ facility to do my service. And supposing I don't have X, Y, and Z, then I can't do service. Like somebody, you know, unless I have my H1, I can't work. And then you have to go back to India, or back to wherever I came from, because I don't have my H1. I can't do anything. A devotee understands there's opportunity for serving Krishna in any circumstance. And whether it's with or without, there's opportunity for service to Krishna. From personal experience with Prabhupada, two direct experiences stand out in my mind very much in this regard. He was teaching by his example. That's the precept here as an example. In Vrindavan, one morning walk, I've narrated this hundreds of times, but Prabhupada, we were on a morning walk with Prabhupada in a forested area down the road from Krishna Balaram Mandir. Now it's very well developed, but there's lots of, at that time, there were lots of forested areas. We were just walking on a little path going through the forest, and Prabhupada was describing how nice is Vrindavan. Simple life, taking care of the economic necessities just by what is naturally supplied, and the balance of one's day just absorbed in thought of Krishna. Going on. And the path meets a certain place. There was like a sharp hill that went down, and we stopped, but going outside the forested area down the bottom, there was this home where the family was living, a little cottage. He said, so one can, the sadhu can go to the home of the grihastha, and with his little bota, he requests some milk, and they'll gladly give the sadhu some milk and some berries and fruits, and that's it for the day. The rest of the day is free to think of Krishna. And now just the mood just continued for a long time. It was very, very sweet from Dhavan, how wonderful it was from Dhavan. Then he turned to Brahmananda, just like that, in a dime. He turned the mood and said, did you receive the $50,000? Did you go check out the, you know, the color transparencies for the book? Did you personally inspect them? Is the quality good? Very good. This printing is very important. Then switch back. Just like that. My understanding, he was doing it deliberately. To show us, one can be contented, one can be contented. Not like I have to be talking about business. Or, I can't talk about business, because I don't want to be down in the mood. If for service to Krishna this, for service to Krishna that, one is perfectly happy serving Krishna, with or without. Because the connection, the happiness is being in service to Krishna. Then another example was the devotees asked Prabhupada if it would be alright if he could, they could take formal pictures that he could place on the altar or in temples. Formal portraits of Prabhupada, so he agreed. But he took it as a instruction giving session for the devotees. So the first set that Prabhupada orchestrated was he wore just his uttariya and plain, simple dhoti, and he orchestrated that it was this really big tree, so that kind of a dark background, and Prabhupada stood right on the edge of where the shadow was. So it was, he was in the sun, and behind was the backdrop, it was dark. The big, big tree. You know, for a photographer, a perfect backdrop. Natural scene. Prabhupada stood very stern looking. And then, you know, many pictures. Then he said, okay. Then he took them to the other place, and then he changed cloth. There was bright orange silk with a long sleeve curtain buttons. and crushed velvet background. Opulence. Simplicity and opulence. And when he came out after dressing in this bright silk orange dhoti, he stood in front of the devotees and put his hand over his head and did a little pirouette, just turned around slowly. And said, just see, for Krishna, we can accept anything. And without that anything, we're also happy. We're happy and we're happy because it just serves to Krishna. So if there are material questionables, if there are material things, will that not agitate the heart of the devotee to now accept these things? If Krishna so desires, I can serve with those things. If Krishna so desires, I don't have those things, and it's okay. Because I can serve Krishna in any circumstance of life. Kashyapa. Kardamuni. When Devahuti wanted to marry Kardamuni, she accepted the ascetic life of her husband. And she became skinny and, you know, paranoid, and but he was appreciating. This is such a great austerity. She would keep the palace life. And to accept being with her husband, she's engaged in these austerities happily. So now let me fulfill her desire and made an arrangement, an aerial mansion out of mantra, and so on, so decorated beautifully, and not being disturbed by having it, not being disturbed by not having it. And so that Prabhupada's message was, one, a devotee needs to learn to be able to be in any circumstances, move in all circumstances of life, and be very happy. If there's facility for service to Krishna, very nice. There's always some service to Krishna. That's the idea. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. You're a follow-up.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.